Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Happy to have you with us this evening. Very happy. We had a really good Tuesday. Rub daddy in a little bit. Okay, that's all the rubbing in I'm going to do. Welcome to your local liberal resistance headquarters. Thrilled to have you with us. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. I can't believe I've been doing this going on 6 years now. Who'd have thought? Oh, the liberals really try to get me off the air. They've been trying and trying and trying, and they fail like Kamala Harris. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330, by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of 6 years, don't forget to listen to the Carry On Commentary. That's my new 60-second daily feature hosted by me that's packaged up and can be heard daily, Monday through Friday, three times a day, right here on KNSS. Also, tomorrow morning, I'll be filling in for my buddy Ray Stevens up in KCMO in the Kansas City area. If you happen to be up in Kansas City, I'll be filling in. And I'm filling in for Steve McIntosh later this month, here at the end of the month, during the Thanksgiving break, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right before Thanksgiving on the morning show with Steve and Ted. So lots of filling in. We'll be doing some more coming up here on KNSS on the morning show. So tune in for that. Other programming note, the Sedgwick County Republican Party is having their reorg. This Thursday, they'll be electing new officers. Make sure if you're a precinct person, that's coming up on Thursday, the 14th, credentialing at 5:30. Meeting starts at 6 at WSU Tech. If you're a precinct person, you don't want to miss it. There's a very cool slate you want to make sure you're there for. Tonight, we've got a great lineup for you. The Speaker of the House, Dan Hawkins, will join us in studio to review the incredible clean sweep Republicans had this week, not only maintaining but actually growing their supermajorities in both chambers. County Commissioner Jim Howell will be with us to explain why the County Commission is considering a new funding agreement that would provide $2.5 million to the Sedgwick County Zoo for a new elephant barn. I mean, I love elephants, but do we need to be using taxpayer money for that? Wichita City Councilman Dalton Glasscock will join us to expose some of the wasteful spending going on at the city council. And Curtis Houck from Newsbusters will explore how news coverage of the presidential candidates was the most wildly imbalanced in history, and yet Donald Trump won anyway. Gotta love it. You gotta love it. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but the left has been very busy this week trying to figure out, doing an autopsy, for lack of a better terms, figuring out how liberals with oodles of cash and all their allies in legacy media and Hollywood managed to bungle the election so royally. The answer is, for the past 8 years, the Republican Party has been having an honest conversation about the real things that ail us. You know, inflation, the hollowing out of rural America, the rise of China, the housing crisis, the opioid crisis, the crisis at our southern border, free speech, the decline of American power, the destruction of traditional values. That's what Republicans have been talking about. Democrats, meanwhile, have been talking about gender transition and a host of other worthless things. More to the point, it's what we cared about. Republicans have been talking about what Democrats and other voters, mainstream voters, what Americans care about, what the average American voter wanted to talk about. The Democrats, they haven't been talking about any of these things. The reason that the culture wars are so deeply offensive to so many voters is not that they're racist or transphobic. It's that voters want to know why, for example, reparations or gender fluidity is more important than putting food on the table. And this is why they lost. The Democrats preferred to call their opponents fascists, racists, misogynists, transphobes, and a host of other names rather than actually listening to the issues that mattered to voters. Democrats didn't lose because they didn't spend enough money. God knows they outspent us. They didn't lose because they failed to trot out enough celebrity influencers. They lost because they were consumed by their own self-flattery, their own self-importance, their own self-indulgence. They should have spent the last 8 years learning from the Republicans' very honest conversation about the plight of America. But they instead insisted on talking to themselves about the things that made them feel morally superior. And that's why they lost on Tuesday. And they governed the way they swore their enemies would. Shutting down free expression with their war on, quote, disinformation. Politicizing the justice system, locking down schools, and worst of all, they did not appreciate the glaring dishonesty at the heart of it all. They pretended like, you know, don't believe your lying eyes. This isn't really happening, but it was. They seemed to think that Americans wouldn't mind that they had pretended Joe Biden was, quote, sharp as a tack. Remember that? That he was in full command. We all knew it. We all saw it. That they actually orchestrated a behind-the-scenes switcheroo, a coup, that the party had portrayed itself as the nation's answer to fascism, democracy, and then did the most undemocratic thing in history, nominated its standard bearer without consulting a single voter. No wonder they lost. Kamala Harris had never won a party nomination for president. They just figured that no one would mind. The most Americans would feel the way they felt, happy that they finally had a viable candidate to challenge Donald Trump. Well, it didn't work that way so well, did it? 312 electoral votes and the popular vote. Folks, it was a clean sweep. And the reason Donald Trump won, the reason Republicans won on Tuesday is because Democrats were insulting. And it was deeply dishonest. And frankly, they got what they deserved. We'll take a quick break, and then Curtis Houck from Newsbusters will expose how news coverage was so biased it was the worst in history, and yet Donald Trump won anyway. You gotta love it. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. AFP believes freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity for all. They are a community of millions of connected citizens and volunteers advocating for solutions based on proven principles to tackle the community's most critical challenges. Make your voice heard today. Join them. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Get involved. Get activated. Sign up today. And, of course, while you're online, don't forget to follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, news coverage of the 2024 presidential candidates was the most wildly imbalanced in history, favoring Vice President Kamala Harris over President-elect now, Donald Trump, by the greatest margin ever recorded. A new Media Research Center study found that ABC, CBS, and NBC news coverage was 78% positive for Harris versus 22% negative for Harris. For Trump, those numbers were flipped, just 15% positive and 85% negative coverage. With us now is Curtis Houck, my buddy from Newsbusters. First off, Curtis, how about them apples, brother? 312 Electoral College and the popular vote. Was that on your bingo card? Did you see that coming?
No, I am a nervous Nelly, John. I'm not, you know, going into election day, I was like, I don't know, the media, I mean, I think some of us that have been around long enough, we know that we've had elections where we've thought we've had it, and then we don't, you know. Yeah. 2012 was one of them. I was a college student then, so maybe that's why there's a little extra PTSD on my end. You know, one of those, I traveled the state the whole day of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, my home state, making calls, doing doors all over the place for the party, and then it just...
Yeah, but, I didn't see this either. I thought it was going to be close. I did not see the absolute butt-whooping. We'll be polite here, not get myself an SEC fine.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think that was why it was just really stunning to see. And, I mean, as you said in the intro, we had the most slanted coverage ever. My colleague Rich Noyes, he's been doing this quite a while. He joined the MRC in the early 2000s. And before that, he was at the Center for Media and Public Affairs, where he was doing similar studies like this, evaluating positive, negative statements on the broadcast networks. The 63% swing between the Democrats topped 2020, 2008, 1992, 2004, all the ones since they started doing this, his former organization, in 1988. So it's pretty stunning to see what Donald Trump overcame to achieve this.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is, because at the very end, you know, John, a week ago, we were sitting here, you could sit here talking about this Liz Cheney thing, where like the Russian bot troll farms must have been in awe of the disinformation campaigns that the liberal media were, you know, undertaking. Like, the whole thing about like firing squad, like, what in the world is this?
Right,
like,
right.
It must have been like, nobody, damn. Like,
and you really noticed this? It in the last week to 10 days. I mean, 2 weeks before the election, they were at least trying to pretend. But when the things started tightening up, or rather when it didn't blow open, when Harris didn't start to take the lead, I started sensing there was just this outright panic in the media. They're like, wait a minute, how come Harris isn't winning this? How come she isn't pulling away? And that's when this just openly, I mean, they were, especially on MSDNC TV and the others, they were just flat out lying in order to try and prop her up, because they couldn't move the polls.
Well, if you recall, I mean, yeah, it was, and for me, it was like the New York Times needle, like when the New York Times needle kept going up and up and up to Trump. And it was still pretty early in the night. We're not talking like midnight Eastern or anything crazy,
right,
like,
right,
that. But it was well into the 70s, pushing 80%. And then, yeah, it kind of stayed there. Once you cross midnight Eastern, you're like, sheesh, you know, like, we just don't see it there. They're not calling these states. And yes, Fox News and News Nation with Decision Desk went out on a limb and really made that first call. But you wonder, like, what were they? They were just in shock. That's probably why they didn't call the election until 5:30. They all called Pennsylvania, but they all held off on these other smaller parts, you know, Maine and Alaska and some of these other things, until they made it official at, around 5:30 Eastern time, which is pretty remarkable. Well, many hours after everyone else did as well. I mean, that just goes to show maybe they were just panicking. They were not prepared for this scenario, because you know this, you go through rehearsals. You can do a little bit of rehearsing,
right?
Preparation for your monologue and whatnot. And these networks folks do this as well. And I don't think they were prepared for the outcome that there was.
No, clearly. We're talking with Curtis Houck from Newsbusters. Then the other thing I've noticed, which has actually been kind of fun to watch, I mean, I will be honest with you, I don't think I have ever watched, well, in fact, I know I've never watched a complete episode of The View, but I did tune in on Wednesday, and then I've also subsequently watched a little more of CNN and MSNBC since then, just to watch how the media has completely come unglued over the defeat. It's been actually fairly amusing to watch. And what's been particularly amusing is the blame game, because now they're in full blame mode.
oh, yeah, it's this person's fault or that person's fault or America's fault. Yeah, The View, you know, Sunny Hostin claiming that her daughter has less rights now than she does in America.
Yes.
It makes it was so pathetic. And you had Alyssa Farah Griffin, who admitted that she voted for Kamala Harris, which, of course, yes, we know, try to slink back to the ship by trying to explain to people why this happened and how we need to change and everything else. Like, you could see her slowly trying to get back in the good graces of people on the right. No, we cannot allow her to do that.
No.
Which is why I'm glad the Trump team's Twitter account blew open a public secret that I had and many others had, that the reason that she left the White House was not, in fact, because she was dissatisfied with Donald Trump, is because she got drunk and public drunkenness and thrown out of a bar with Olivia Newsy, of all people. And Mark Meadows was like, you're done. So they tweeted that out a couple weeks ago when she was mad at the garbage truck thing.
Well, I remember that.
Did with Trump. But I'll put it this way, John. I think better use of that time and that time slot, we should, when they find the monkeys in South Carolina, they should put the monkies on TV,
on The View.
Yeah, we should place them with those monkeys, those research monkeys, because it'd be more compelling television than what we just witnessed.
Having watched that little episode of The View, I think they already have replaced them with monkeys. But Curtis, you know, the other thing I've noticed is now the conversation has shifted to this phrase, and you kind of alluded to it, is what's wrong with America? The funny thing is Democrats just, they're still not getting it. I mean, in every demographic, Donald Trump picked up votes, every subgroup in every demographic.
Right. It's what do Democrats need to do better next time? It's kind of, it is a strategy session. It is not, why did you lose? It's like, what do Democrats need to do going forward? You know, so really, it's kind of subtle if you don't really think about it too much, but it is the wrong question, you know, and that's really the issue. Instead of what's wrong with us, how did we miss this? The answer should be, that's what it should be. But instead,
right,
it's like, well, what do we need to do to change our messaging? We've heard this before when Democrats get shellacked on. It's always like, well, we didn't present.
Exactly. We didn't communicate well enough.
We didn't package what we've done. Well, no, maybe it's a deeper issue.
Maybe it is what you did that caused you to lose the election.
Not just what you said and how you said it. Our views are fine. Actually, no. You look at it in Philadelphia, right around 11 Eastern, CBS was pointing out that some of these precincts in Philadelphia, Hispanic precincts, were moving 6 to 8 points towards Donald Trump. That is stunning, and that is remarkable. And I just have to say, as well, as a Pennsylvanian here, I'm enjoying Bob Casey refusing to concede the election because he's like, we need to count every legal ballot and provisional ballots and all this other stuff. He's actually losing votes. He's not gaining votes. So he's like, I'm not conceding. We still haven't counted all the votes yet.
Yeah.
Yes, you're actually losing votes. You're not gaining votes in the provisional ballots.
That's okay. Stacey Abrams still thinks she's governor of Georgia.
They blew the doors off of every, you know. It was Georgia, I think, again, is just a model there for easier to vote, harder to cheat, and, you know.
Yeah, despite the fact that they said for years. Despite the fact that they said for the last 4 years that Republicans have changed that law to make it harder to vote, sure enough, that wasn't the case. Curtis, I appreciate you as always, brother, for your insights. Congrats. Thank you again for delivering Pennsylvania for us. If folks want to follow you guys, you've got some great research, especially that data on the biased news coverage. They can find that information at newsbusters.org.
Yep, at Newsbusters on X, Twitterverse, at the MRC, and I am at Curtis Houck. We've got way more to go, folks. So
appreciate you. By the way, hey, what's your prediction? Republicans hold the House?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably going to be the same margin. You know, it's like 222 or whatever it is, where you've got like a three seat majority or something like that.
That's okay. We'll take it.
That's where we're at.
We'll take it, Curtis. I appreciate you. Thank you again, my friend.
Carry on.
We'll take a quick break, and then Kansas Speaker of the House Dan Hawkins will be with us in studio to review the clean sweep Republicans had this week in both the House and Senate. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman. And no, by the way, it is not too early for Christmas carols. Did you miss a part of last week's show? Don't worry about it. We post clips from all shows on KNSS.com. You can always download as well the Odyssey app and get started. You can get all our stuff there. Just download the Odyssey app. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and get in latest updates on the show there. Well, we had a historic election. Huge victories. We had a clean sweep in the House and Senate, actually gaining seats. With us now, not to gloat, but to give us just the summary, is the Speaker of the Kansas House, Dan Hawkins. You're not the Grinch, by the way. I think that's the little lady on the second floor. Dan, thank you for joining us tonight. Congrats.
Well, not to gloat, I wouldn't be wearing a Denver cap.
Hey.
How about them Chiefs?
Oh, gee, many Christmas. I thought you said not to gloat. You know, by the way, Phil's also a Broncos fan, so, you know, unless you want to be thrown out on your arse, you might watch yourself tonight. Well, I think the two of us could take you, even though you get your arm in a sling. So.
That's right.
All right, so let's start with this. This is, so on the 6th, so the day after the massive sweep, you guys swept. It was a big night both nationally and in the state. Laura Kelly goes to Twitter. And she tweets out, quote, "Congratulations to the newest members of the Kansas legislature." Okay, that's nice. That's nice. She's being nice.
Oh, it gets worse.
And then she says, "I look forward to working with you to deliver what Kansans want most." Okay. All right.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Expanding access to affordable health care.
Medicaid expansion.
Protecting women's reproductive freedom.
Abortion,
right. And lowering the cost of living for all hardworking Kansans. Keeping in mind, she vetoed how many tax bills?
Four tax bills.
So, I mean, talk about, I mean, she spent how much money trying to knock out you guys?
$2.1 million she spent. And what did she get?
Nothing.
She took out Vic Miller, her own guy.
A Democrat. Yeah.
A Democrat.
I mean, talk about someone who is out of touch. That's her tweet, is, "I want to work with you on my agenda," and you just won three seats in the House, grew your majority in the House by three and the Senate by two.
So realistically, I mean, you know, of course, everybody says, well, why did we win? There are several reasons, and I can also tell you several reasons why they lost. Why they lost is because they weren't paying attention to what the people wanted.
Exactly, yes.
So the centerpiece of their whole campaign was protecting women's reproductive rights. That was the centerpiece. And it's settled.
Right. That's not what I was going to say. They've done that. It's
value
done.
Them both was soundly defeated. The courts have settled it.
Whether we like it or not, it's done in Kansas.
What is the most important piece as you go throughout the state? Because we did. We had a ground game that's unbelievable. We had the best ground game we've ever had since I've been there. We knocked over 170,000 doors. And what did everybody want?
Property tax relief. Thank you. Yes.
Property tax relief.
I know. My wife and I, between the two of us, probably knocked, I mean, I don't know, we weren't keeping track, but there were weeks that we were doing 500-600 doors a week.
Absolutely.
Nobody ever brought up freaking abortion.
No.
Nobody.
No.
And we were not doing Republicans. We were doing swing voters, undecideds. It wasn't coming up.
And the problem they had was is the middle of the road pack, the governor's pack, and oh, by the way, if you stand in the middle of the road long enough, you get run over.
Yeah, exactly.
What they did was they made it really salacious. They went over the top. They were saying things that was just so absurd that the voters, they saw through it. And they say, this is just bunk.
Talking about abortion bans.
Yeah.
Like, wait, you guys.
Well, and rape and all kinds of things.
Gosh.
I mean, it was horrible, the things that they were putting out. And our folks, what did they do? They stayed on message. Every time that would come up, they would say, that's settled. We want to talk about property tax. We want to talk about inflation, affordability, crime. Those are the things that we talked about, and that really resonated with the voters across the gamut, including Johnson County.
Yeah, I mean, when we were knocking, and in particular, because, you know, my wife and I were helping out with AFP, and they were helping us target some of those districts. Unfortunately, like, Seligman didn't win. A tough race. You know, he was running against Henry Helgerson, an entrenched Democrat. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, again, swing district. We're working on swing voters and undecideds, probably some Democrats. In fact, a number of the doors that we were knocking were lean liberals.
Right.
And even they were talking about property tax reform. Some of them were talking about the transgender issue.
Sure.
They weren't talking about abortion.
Not at all. And even in my district here in Wichita, I actually had a race this time. Guy that ran against me actually went out and worked hard, sent out a lot of lies in his mailers.
But
he was still doing the things that he needed to do to try to win. He did some Facebook. So he really worked. He worked hard, spent quite a bit of money. But he too spent all of his time talking about two things, abortion and Medicaid expansion. And what we did, we went to those doors and consistently we heard the same things, taxes, property taxes, and even Democrat doors. We would even have Democrats. We had Democrats that voted for us. I don't know if they'd ever voted for us before, but they voted for us this time. Because the message that the Democrats were using was just old, worn out stuff. Nobody believed it anymore.
Well, and I think even they realize Medicaid expansion is, first off, it's unaffordable. And the other issue is it's just not a high priority when you can't put food on the table.
That's absolutely right. People rent's high, you know. Houses are unaffordable today. There's a lot of things that are just totally unaffordable. How does a young person coming out of college even afford a house today?
Right.
Well, I mean, it's impossible because, you know, if you want to live in a nice house, it's going to be $200,000 and up.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. And it's a lot higher than that now. So, yeah, the affordability issue is probably outside of the property tax. The affordability issue was second most. And then, also, something that really was talked about a lot at the doors by people, of course, is the border and the security issue. The fact that, you know, there are people being killed in the United States by the immigrants that are coming, the illegal immigrants that are coming in. I think President-elect Trump is correct. You know, it's like some of these nations just opened up their prisons and said, go to America.
Well, and I know, by the way, we're talking with Speaker of the House Dan Hawkins. In one of the districts that Marlena and I were knocking in, I remember we talked to an immigrant who had come to the country legally, was a citizen now,
right,
able to vote, took her 12 years, as I recall, to get her citizenship, went through the system, did it legally, and she was talking about how she'd seen buses coming to dropping them off in her neighborhood, and how that frustrated her. And I'm thinking, you know, well, that's Laura Kelly for you, because she's encouraged that with these NGOs, and you know that's Donald Trump or that's excuse me Joe Biden and Laura Kelly encouraging that and bringing them into your community.
No, absolutely. It security is a big issue today. Making sure that we're supporting our law enforcement. Our first responders, all of those folks, you know, I think we here are just a little bit better insulated than some of the other states.
Yeah,
the border states certainly have the biggest problem, but we do have some of it. And our immigrants that are here legally absolutely despise, you know, the open borders. They and that's something that's changed over time.
Yeah,
you go back a few years ago, they were a lot more protective of that. Now they're saying, hey, this is wrong. They need to come in just like we did. We need to have a good immigration policy. And I hope that with President Trump and both houses of both the Senate and the House, that we'll get good policy put in place and we'll secure the borders.
Do you mind sticking through? I got a break. You mind sticking through the break? And then I want to talk a little bit about what you're going to do with
absolutely
this shiny new supermajority.
I was going to jump into that.
Let me take my break and then we'll come back. We've got Speaker of the House Dan Hawkins with us. We'll talk about what he plans to do since it sounds like a mandate to me. We'll look at judicial selection, electoral reform, budget changes, administrative changes. What he's going to do with that shiny new supermajority when we get back. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. We'll be back right after this.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity, Kansas. AFP believes freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity. They're a community of millions of concerned citizens just like you. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And, of course, while you're at it, don't forget to like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Time now for another Hartman Truth Minute.
Well, now it is time, maybe past time. Where in the world did the Dems think they could insult the masses and win an election? Okay, the shiny object didn't win. Dems will never stop giving their opinions on false claims and lies. It was a landslide victory per Reagan. Okay, here is reality. President-elect Trump must engage as we know he will. The Honorable Mike Pompeo deserves a front-row seat in the Trump administration. His stint as Secretary of State was our nation's best. He is a real leader. I hope he is willing to serve once again. He will do our country proud. We conservatives have the wheel. We must show our mettle. Leadership is Mike Pompeo. We deserve the best of the best. Secretary Pompeo is just that leader.
And, you know, Dan, we're speaking with Speaker of the House, Dan Hawkins. If obviously we've heard now that Trump won't be considering Mike Pompeo for the cabinet. But, you know, Mike Pompeo is now being considered maybe as a gubernatorial candidate. People trying to encourage draft Pompeo.
Certainly, I guarantee you there have been some calls made. I'm not sure that that will happen. Who knows? I would love to see it happen. I think it would be a good thing. I think Mike would be great back here in Kansas leading us after he, you know, delivering us out of 8 years of bondage with Kelly. you know, I'm a little bit of just there, but you know, we've got an opportunity here. We've had the supermajority ever since I've been there. Sometimes it's been a real big supermajority, sometimes small. This last 4 years, we've been at just one extra. So it's been pretty slim. When we started this year, this campaign season, I remember saying, you know, the press was all saying, hey, governor's coming after you. And she did. She brought $2.1 million and then another $660,000 from the ACLU against us. We went out there and raised a lot of money ourselves. We did not match her, but we certainly had enough money that we could really work hard. I said back then when they were saying that they were going to take us out, I said, no, I don't think so. I think we will stick to our message. We will do well. We'll have a great ground game. And we will end up having two extra when we come back. Well, it's off. We got three extra. So we're at 88.
The Senate got two extra.
They did. So they'll be at 31. So that is a pretty good advantage for us. The governor will probably be unhinged. I expect the governor to really work hard at vetoing everything that we could possibly want. This time we've got the numbers where we should be able to override most of what we want. There could be some things that maybe we can't override, but for the most part, I think we'll be very successful at the override. Governor hates being overridden, so don't veto so much, Governor.
so what do you think? I mean, if you're a betting man, Well, and if you're say, well, I don't know, Speaker of the House, and you have the ability to control some of the agenda. Oh, wait a minute, you are Speaker of the House. Are we looking at things like finally tackling judicial selection, electoral reform? I know you've already talked about change. You're already going to do the changing the budgetary process. Maybe looking back at that rules and regs constitutional amendment that we tried last year. Is that the kind of stuff?
Yeah. So
fundamental changes?
There are going to be some fundamental changes. The budget's the biggest one, and we're working on it right now. We are taking back the budgeting process. The governor still produce a budget, but we're going to have our own budget, and we'll work from our own budget. And of course, that's kind of got the governor unhinged as well. She doesn't like that. But, you know, I tried to work with her last year and she refused. She didn't want to work with us on budgeting. So I said, let's do it ourselves. So that's a big thing. Probably one of the first things we do when we get back, I would say absolutely the first thing is we will have a property tax relief bill. She vetoed every single one we had last year.
She's officially said she will veto that.
She has said she will veto any property tax bill we bring. And
why?
Because she's the governor. She, you know, hear me roar. You know?
But I mean, she has to know the same thing that people want it. Why? What's her reason for vetoing?
Well, I don't think she. How much does she listen? I mean, if you look at what's happened over the last 2 years, we've overrode her on a lot of things that the people wanted overridden,
like transgender.
There's a whole long list. And undoubtedly, she doesn't listen to the people of Kansas because if she did. Because she is the leader of the Democrats, and she set the tone for the Democrats. The Democrats across the state used the same message, and it was the governor's message. And so I believe the people of Kansas spoke against the governor finally and said, you have went too far. And she has. She has went way too far. She talks about us being extreme. I don't believe we're extreme at all. She has the extreme policies. She has those extreme ideas out there, and it's up to us, and it has been, to push back against those. Hopefully, in 2026, we'll have a Republican governor, and then we can get a few more things done.
It is kind of crazy when you think about it. I mean, what's the surplus up to now? $4
billion? Almost $5
billion. $5 billion in surplus, and she's not willing to do some property tax reform.
No, it's ridiculous. In our,
it's not like you need the money, Gov.
Well, and our revenue continues to come in over estimate.
I guess I don't understand why she's out of hand without even seeing the bill. She's saying, I'll veto it. I won't take it.
No, she's going to do that, and we're going to override it. I guarantee you that will be the first override.
Sight unseen.
She's saying it. Yeah. And we'll override it early on in the session. So we will have a veto and override probably by early February.
Well, I will be in Topeka. The John Eck at Eck Insurance is sending the show to Topeka next year. So we'll be broadcasting one Sunday a month from Topeka. I hope I'm there when you do that.
Wow. I'm going to have to tell John Eck, thanks for doing that. I didn't realize he was sponsoring you.
He's sending us to Topeka one Sunday a month. So yeah. I'm hoping I'm there on the nights you do that.
Well, you just need to make sure that you're there.
I will do that. I can pick the night.
That's right.
And we're going to be there you go into session on the 13th, 14th, something like that.
13th of January.
So I will be there that night. Yep. So we'll be there that Sunday night, and so that way we can be there for the start of session the following Monday. So we'll be broadcasting from Jason Watkins is a beer wholesalers area. So we'll be down there. We'll broadcast from down there. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm going to make sure I try and time these so that it's when you guys have something fun going on.
Sure. Absolutely. No, I think it's going to be a dynamic year. I think we're going to get a lot done. We've got 21 new freshmen. So we've got to get them, brought up to speed just as quick as we can. And we will do that. We work with them very, very well. I think across the board, we're going to have really a great group of freshmen. And our body is going to be better than it's ever been. We're not going to have two Republicans that stop us
like you did last time. Yeah, Ty had that problem too. Yeah. Are you expecting any leadership changes, or do you think both chambers probably have the same leadership team?
No, there's always a chance for change. I do think in the House, the assistant majority leader is really the race that everybody's gunning for. You know, Les Mason.
Oh, that's my dear friend Les.
Yeah, and so we've got three folks that are running for that. That's the big race.
Do I know them?
Yeah. It's Barb.
Barb Wassinger.
Wassinger, Kyle Hoffman, and Clark Sanders.
Okay. Yep. I know all three. Yep. Okay. And then I know in the Senate, there's Larry Alley, who is currently the majority leader. From what I understand, our friend Chase Blasey has announced.
That's
so
right.
There's Chase is my state senator, as a matter of fact. So there's a challenge over there. Well, Dan, sure. I appreciate you. I'm coming up on my top of the hour break. 30 seconds real quick. The majority report. How do they get to it? You got 10 seconds.
Go to Dan Hawkins, Kansas. Kansas is spelled out .com.
All right. Jim Howell will be with us coming up here just a second. We'll be back right after this.
Oh, a little 70s retro. All right.
I'm not a gloater, but I've been wanting to do this for an hour now. So you're welcome. John.
That's fair. Why didn't you do like We Are the Champions? That's a good one too.
Ooh, I bet that's coming up next. Like welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. You can always listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio, and make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Give us a call. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. Well, coming up at the November 13th Board of County Commission meeting, Sedgwick County commissioners may be voting on a funding agreement that would provide $2.5 million of your money to the Sedgwick County Zoo for a new elephant barn. And I'm a pachyderm, so, you know, I love elephants. The commission may be voting on this, despite the fact that the public will not have had the opportunity to weigh in on the agreement. So the question is do Sedgwick County voters have the right to say whether, you know, their money should be used to fund a new elephant barn before it's voted on? With us now to answer that question and kind of explain, you know, this whole concept is Sedgwick County Commissioner Jim Howell. Jim, thank you for joining us. It's always nice to have you on the show, my friend.
Well, John, thank you for having me tonight. I sure appreciate it.
It was interesting. I was on, I think it was Kansas Week recently, or I can't remember the context, but someone was talking to me and they asked me about you, and I described you as the Don Quixote of Republican commissioners, because I felt that you were always the one tilting at fiscal windmills, because it does seem like you're constantly the one, hopefully with Stephanie Wise and Jeff Blueball, we've got you some allies, and Ryan Beatty does his part as well. But did I describe this right? I mean, it does seem like this is, it may not be property tax dollars, because I understand that now they may be using, you know, proceeds of some investment sales or whatever, but the bottom line is it's still tax dollar, or taxpayer dollars rather, that is going to go to this project.
Well, I appreciate the adjectives you're using. I love the commission. I think we have a bright future ahead of us, and I'm looking forward to working with both Jeff and Stephanie going forward. But back to your point, you know, when this was first proposed, I did react, because as far as I knew, this was going to be basically take an ending balance, which is dollars that are left over from previous tax years. We have some balance that we carry forward from year to year, but not a lot. But just taking some of that money and handing out essentially property tax dollars for another pet project, and I reacted to that. I thought, you know, this is going to stop. In fact, I've got a resolution that's going to be up Wednesday as well. I'm probably going to push that back a week, because I've got some personal issues that I need to push that back for 1 week, I believe. But the idea is that we would prohibit property tax dollars for being used for anything other than core functions of government.
Which is a great idea. I think that's, that's an excellent idea. In fact, when I had both Jeff and Stephanie Wise on the show here over the last few weeks, I asked them about that, and both of them were supportive.
Yeah, I do think that I do think it's going to pass when this comes up for a vote, probably, but if it doesn't, we'll take it up again once we get our new commission seated, and I have no doubt it will pass at that point. But I don't think it's semantics either. When I knock on doors, and you know this is true, if someone says, "Man, you're taxing me out of my house," and we say, "Yeah, but we're using all your money for really, really important things like the sheriff and infrastructure," And they might respond saying, yeah, but what about things like Sedgwick County Zoo?
Right.
And in the past, it's a valid argument. You know, I think that there is a truth that says we are using some tax dollars for things like Exploration Place and Sedgwick County Zoo. And there's actually about 15 other things I could list that are in that camp. We don't talk about them nearly as much, but you get the idea. And so to have a prohibition from using property tax dollars for that type of spending, I think is needed. And actually, what I think it would do in this type of question today, it actually gives us a bit of a backstop. But let me give you another perspective, which, again, I'm pretty researched in what I do. And I discovered something, honestly, I didn't even know 2 weeks ago. I did not know, and maybe I'm stupid. Maybe everyone else is smarter than me on this topic. But I did not know back in November of 1966, there was a public vote that established authority and actually really a mandate to the county commission to levy taxes and borrow money, actually, to purchase 617 acres of land and create the Sedgwick County Park and Sedgwick County Zoo. And what comes with that obligation then is it even says in the ballot question to make improvements, which means buildings and exhibits and to have animals. And what is written between those lines here is maintenance of those buildings and care for these animals. And you are going to have to pay some people to do that. And so there's a long-term obligation from that vote. This vote was in November of 66. It passed with 55% of the people voting for this. And that set us up, essentially. So we opened a zoo 5 years later, 1971. In August, we opened that zoo. And ever since then, we've had agreements with the society to operate the zoo. We've had agreements with ourselves on how we would manage the finances and make sure we take care of the operations of the zoo. We have 112 employees out there.
I get that, Jim. But you and I both know that one legislative body can't legally obligate future bodies. So there's ways out of those things. But I would say that also doesn't obligate the future bodies to massive expansions, to ongoing expenses above and beyond. The zoo has grown exponentially, and when you look at things like this expansion, for example, this $2.5 million for the elephant barn, and don't get me wrong, I love the idea, and I know that they're trying to pursue a public partnership to fund this. My question on this is, I just saw that the press release that they rolled out, what, less than 2 weeks ago? I think my response to that would be, let them go to the public. Let them go to the private sector.
Sure.
And if they come back after, say, 2 months or 6 months, and they find that, hey, we came up $500,000 short, then come back to the county, then come back to the taxpayers and say, we came up $500,000 short. Can you come up with the rest? As opposed to here, where we just started the campaign and you want $2.5 million from the taxpayers. Do you see the difference here?
I absolutely, John, you and I totally agree. But now there's one twist to this, which makes this a little bit, again, everything's more complicated than it should be. And you know that.
Oh, yeah. It always is when it comes to spending.
So, in this case, they're aware that in 2023, actually going back to 2014, there has been a federal grant from the Department of the Interior, hands out roughly about $250 million each year. Last year was about $240 million.
Of our money.
That's true. Now, here's what's interesting is it's by application. So each of the states apply for some of those funds, and Kansas will make an application for various projects across our state. And that deadline for that application to go in is a couple of weeks away from now. And so what the idea is that last year was 23 states got around $240 million roughly. This year the appropriation is about $257 million is going to be handed out their different applications, and they will spend all $257 million. I hate this. I actually at the staff meeting, I said, we've got to stop spending money. This is why we're $36 trillion in debt.
Right.
Bad government. But now here's the other problem: is they're going to hand it out to some state. The question is, do you want us to be applying for some of those funds to make this easier for the fundraising of this exhibit? Principally, I could say I know they can raise $10 million. I have total assurance. I know they can raise $10 million. On the other hand, here's the other twist to this, is we have about $7 million of CIP. These are improvements and repairs that are due for the buildings we have at Central County Zoo. And what they're saying is to use $2.5 million of investment revenue to basically forward that money to the zoo, because there has to be a public match, And then when they raise the money, they'll repay that $2.5 million by taking care of $2.5 million of CIP out of the money that they raise. So in a sense, this is still our obligation. We're simply using a mechanism to help them make this application for the grant. And that's really what this is.
And what if the grant doesn't come through? Are we then no longer obligated to give them the $2.5 million?
No, we still have to do the $2.5 million. But again, they'll raise the $10 million and they'll pay us back. So their obligation to us is essentially raise the money and pay us back. And that's what they're committed to do. I actually put them on the spot at our staff meeting. They agreed that is their plan. So at the end of the day, this is we're using investment income, not property tax revenue. Not that it makes a lot of difference between you and me. I understand that it really is still taxpayer cash. But this is money we didn't expect to have. This is above and beyond our, you know, our investments are performing very well. It should be used for only one-time spending. And in this case, by using it this way, we're going to take care of some CIP obligation down the road. But by putting this money out there today, we can actually help them with this application. Whether they get the grant or not, we'll have to see what happens. It doesn't really matter because our responsibility is to put that money up front and then be paid back when they receive the money for their from their donations.
Well, Jim, as always, you are well informed, and that is the one thing that's always nice about having you on the show is I know I'm going to have somebody who knows the facts, who's well informed, and who can and articulate both sides of it. I appreciate you doing your due diligence on this. If folks have questions, if they want to, you know, follow up. By the way, I appreciate you as well filling in for my buddy Pete Meitzner, who was going to join us tonight, but he went to the Chiefs game, and then just, so I'll give him a pass on this one. But I appreciate Pete's willingness to come on as If folks want to connect with you, if they have questions about this or anything else, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Actually, I give out my cell phone. It's 316-253-6797. Or can certainly reach out to me at my email at jim.howell@sedgwick.gov.
Brother, I appreciate you as always, and carry on the fight, my friend. Carry on tilting the windmills, brother.
I appreciate that. Good show tonight, John. Appreciate all you do, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. We'll take a quick break, and then we're going to continue our theme about talking about government spending with Wichita City Councilman Dalton Glasscock. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. AFP believes freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity for all. Their community of millions of concerned citizens advocating for solutions based on proven principles to tackle our most critical challenges. Join them. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And, of course, while you're online, don't forget to like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, this week's Wichita City Council meeting was the second longest in history. I think it went till like 8 or 9 o'clock at night. It follows one last week, which was another one of the longest on records. So what's been taking up so much time? They haven't been naming libraries. Trust me, spending was among many topics. With us now to tell us all about it is Wichita City Councilman Dalton Glasscock, another of those Don Quixotes tilting at windmills to prevent spending. Dalton, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
John, I think last time I was on your show, I was on the other side of the microphone, so it's good not being the host.
That's right. You were guest hosting. That's right. Thank you. Well, it's nice having you. By the way, how's everything with Todd, with my buddy Todd Starnes?
It's going great. Todd is always Todd, but he's been celebrating a lot more.
I'll bet. Is he on the short list for any presidential appointments or cabinet positions? Everybody else seems to be right now.
Hey, let's start that rumor. We're going to start that rumor right now.
Hey, White House Communications, it would certainly be an upgrade over Karine Jean-Pierre.
You heard it here first, John. He's being considered.
I'm all in. I will post that on Twitter. So, Dalton, I got to, you know, this all, and I read it in the Eagle, and then I started seeing some other stories about the spending, at the city council, including, you know, $500,000 for a couple of porta potties or temporary rest, you know, these outdoor restrooms in the parks that were valued, that I guess the cost is $100,000, but they're with the bottom for $350,000 or something like that. And I'm just sitting here thinking, the city of Wichita is facing a budget shortfall. Last time I checked, it was like $5 million. I'm sorry. I know you and Lily aren't behind this. What the heck is going on?
I think you're asking the same questions I'm asking, and I haven't had the chance to tell you this yet, but our next meeting, we actually don't have one this upcoming Tuesday, but November 19th, they're actually coming to ask for more money because we have an overbid estimate for the two porta potties that we spent $500,000 on. So they're actually coming back to ask for more money on the 19th because we didn't spend enough yet.
For those of you who aren't familiar, this is a couple of portable restrooms that they're going to put in at the parks. And I've heard the stories that they're worried about, you know, permanent restroom facilities at these parks because they can be vandalized or people can have sex in them or whatever. So they've come up with this really cool idea of these semi-permanent porta potties. But the retail cost on them was X and we're paying 3X. It's like the military buying, you know, $700 hammers. I just don't understand. And again, what this comes down to for me is the city of Wichita is facing a budget shortfall. Why are we even considering it right now?
Well, yes. Each of the, we call them the Portland Loos. They're being called the Portland Loos. And I want to tell everybody that I voted against this because this is wild overreach of government over government spending.
So did the mayor, by the way.
Yes. The mayor did, and also J.B. Johnson, who represents Northwest Wichita. So I want to commend both of my colleagues there. Each one of these is $258,000. Do you know what the average home price in Wichita is, John?
I think it's more than that, isn't it? Or less than that. No, it's less than that.
$197,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So the average Wichitan is living in a house that is less expensive than what we spent on porta potty.
On a shitter. I mean,
Well, and they're called Portland Loo for a reason. The city that they're modeled after is Portland. So I did some research about other communities that have these type of facilities. Portland, Seattle, Sacramento, L.A., San Francisco all have these. Do you know what also has the highest public defecation rates in the country?
Let me guess. Those cities. Yeah, I was going to say those same cities. And is that the cities that – The vote, people who voted for this, I mean, you know, Brandon Johnson and the rest of the Democrats on the city council, are those the cities that they want to turn Wichita into?
That's a question I tried to ask from the bench, but I did not get an answer to, because I think it's very concerning if we're modeling anything that the city of Wichita is doing after Portland or really any city on the West Coast. And we see the challenges they're facing, especially with the homelessness crisis that we see on the West Coast. And then we're spending $500,000 on two porta potties,
and it's not just the porta potties. There's been a lot of this stuff. I mean, I know, you know, I've brought up the 1.9 or whatever it is $1 million in art at the water treatment facilities. There's other instances like this, but it's just there's a mindset amongst some on the city council that we have to do this or we have to do that or we have to, but the mindset isn't where it needs to be, and I'm grateful that you and the mayor and on occasion JV are willing to recognize when you're facing a budget. It's great to spend that money when you're flush, when you're sitting on lots of extra cash, although when that happens you're supposed to give it back. But right now, and particularly when you're facing a budget shortfall, that's when you have to tighten your belt.
Yeah, it's actually probably worse to spend it when it's flush, because then you create this culture of dependency that people are dependent on government to solve their problems. And so that's what happened when the federal government used $70 million of ARPA funding into Wichita. The county got $100,000, and I think they spent it far more wisely. They spent on infrastructure projects. They spent on one-time capital expense projects. The city spent a significant portion of our funds on funding nonprofits. You know what those nonprofits are going to do and what they're going to come back asking for us in a year and a half when these funds run out? More money.
Right. Well, and we're talking with City Councilman Dalton Glasscock. This is what's happened with, for example, the Violence Interrupter Program. This is also what's happened with the 42 firefighters. You know, they were funded through ARPA funding. And now when that money runs out, now you've got permanent positions on payroll that are funded through a federal grant. When the grant runs out, I mean, and I guarantee you, by the way, the mayor did not go down to that city, that employee, and tell her to lay those people off. That's just a bogus accusation on its face. That's bogus. I know you're not going to weigh in on that probably, but I can guarantee you she didn't go down there and do that. That ethics claim is just a joke. But
I trust our ethics committee to find out the truth on that. And when it comes down to the hiring of the 42 firefighters, we need those firefighters. And
yes,
because we need them, those should have been funded from the general budget.
Exactly.
They should not have been funded from one-time grant. They should have been funded from the general budget, because that is the essential function of government, is public safety.
And the previous council set you guys up to fail by funding them the way they did, because now at some point you're going to have to backfill that. And where are you going to pay for that? That's the problem with doing it with the way they did it.
Well, when you look at the violence interrupters program, it could be the best program in the nation. And, you know, maybe it is the best thing to solve violence in our community. They've only been operating for 24 days. I will not support increasing any organization's funding 100%, more than $1.6 million, with only 24 days of efficacy. This is not a vote against the organization. This is a vote against staff that feels comfortable bringing another proposal after 24 days of efficacy and saying you should fund this program more. You do not know what any success program is for just 24 days of a program in operation.
Regardless of how noble the program may be, and it sounds like from everything I've seen, it sounds like it's a good program. It's got noble intentions. It sounds like the limited results we've seen are good. But you're right. Well, it's you can't just continue to fund something without some definitive results.
And I said from the bench, because I believe in the potential of the program, they cannot rely on us, because we will fail them. Government will fail them, because we will always continue to do that. If it is such a good program, J.B. Johnson actually proposed a good offloading program where, you know, we would give them 90% funding and 70% funding, 60% funding to help them get nonprofit funding for the organization. Because in 2 years from now, when the funding runs out, we cannot fund them, because we're going to be facing a budget deficit of more than $3 million. That balloons to $10 million, and then that subsequently balloons to $12 million. We will not have the funds to fund them. And so because I believe in the potential of the program, we have to set them up for success and make sure that they have other funding streams aside from the city government.
Right, because eventually that money is going to run out, because this is not a core function of government. At some point, you're going to have to offload that to the nonprofit or to the private sector, which is where it should be housed. And again, because this is not, I mean, I saw Brandon Johnson talking to the press and saying that it should be funded out of the police department. But that's, again, now you're taking, what, are you going to take cops off the streets in order to do this?
These are the questions that need to be asked, I think, of my colleagues. And these are also the questions that we have to be adults in the room. And we have to realize that we have a finite number of resources. The general public is not supporting further tax increases. And so we're going to have difficult conversations of how we allocate money in the future. And it has to be on core services of government, which is public safety and infrastructure. Those are the core functions of government. And we have to do those well. And we're not doing those well. And until we do those well, we need to make sure they're fully funded before we fund other projects.
Yep. No, I agree, Dalton. Well, again, much like my previous guest, I've got my two Don Quixotes back to back tonight. And you know, I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and I was telling them how grateful I am to have my city councilman, who is arguably the most conservative and certainly the most fiscally conservative member of the Wichita City Council. Dalton, I'm so grateful to have you there fighting for us and fighting for conservative fiscal conservatism. If folks want to connect with you, if they have questions, if they want to just reach out to express their support, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Honestly, just visit DaltonGlasscock.com. All my contact information is there. Feel free to reach out, and I'll take that compliment with a badge of honor, John. So thank you.
Brother, I appreciate you as always. Carry on the fight, my friend.
Talk soon.
We'll take a quick break, pay a few bills, and then we'll be taking your calls, and we'll talk with Deb Lucia, chair of the Sedgwick County Republican Party, about next week's reorganization meeting. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. And I don't want any calls. No, it is not too early. You can call, but no, it is not too early.
for Christmas music. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. And as always, our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. Studio lines are open. Want to hear from you. We're taking calls, but we'll kick it off with the current chair of the Sedgwick County Republican Party, Deb Lucia. Deb, thank you for joining us. It is always a pleasure, and congratulations on a fantastic results for the Sedgwick County Republican Party on Tuesday.
Well, thank you very much. We did have a very good day on Tuesday in Sedgwick County and really across the state and across the nation. It was a great day.
Well, and you guys put in a lot of work. I saw the, I know my wife and I both got texts from the Sedgwick County Republican Party. There was a lot of work that the party put in to help deliver this result for candidates in Sedgwick County this cycle. And I was glad to see that, because there have been times in the past where the party hasn't been as engaged. And I was really glad to see that you really stepped up on behalf of your candidates.
Well, we worked really hard to do that and really to get people engaged in Sedgwick County that haven't been before. And you know, and part of that was to get information to them, like sending out a, here's the people to vote for. Here's the Republicans on the ballot. Here's judges to vote for the appellate judges. And really to help people when they go to the ballot know what they're looking at and to help them along. So we felt the results were there, and we were really proud of that.
You know, I saw that voter guide that you put out on your website and on the Sedgwick County GOP Facebook page, and I actually saw some of the comments on there where people were saying, hey, I'm glad that you put this out. That's something that hasn't been done, or I don't remember having been done that in every cycle in the past, too. And it's something that is so important that we educate folks. You know, Kansans for Life does their voter guide. People have asked me to do that in the past, to endorse and put out voter guides. I try not to do it because we want to have everybody come on the show. And if I do endorsements on the air, then especially, then a candidate may not be willing to come on. But I did appreciate that you did that this time.
So once the primary is over and there's Republicans on the ballot, and we had solid Republicans across the board, we had good candidates, people that we could be proud for to have as Republicans that win elections. And so in some ways it was kind of easy to put it together. You know, what becomes difficult are the races where they're nonpartisan, and there were some of those. We can provide information about, here's the Republican on the ballot. You know, if it's a nonpartisan race, then technically we're not supposed to get involved with those, but letting people know who the Republicans are, who the Democrats are, or in the appellate judges' cases, these are the ones that we've seen have voted conservatively,
right,
or have voted with fiscal policies in mind, or fiscally, or, you know, the things that Republicans stand for, that's who we want to represent us. And so letting people know there's nothing wrong with that.
And, you know, it's interesting. There's always been this debate about the quote unquote nonpartisan races, particularly, you know, people will talk about those with regards to the city council races or the school board races where they claim where they're quote unquote nonpartisan. And yet we saw this last year where the Sedgwick County Democrat Party endorsed in the mayor's race. Or where candidates were, I mean, right now on the city council, you have someone who served as a former chair of the Democrat Party. And you've got, you know, the former mayor was a former Democrat state representative. So, I mean, it's, yes, they're nonpartisan, but it's sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We all know they're fairly partisan.
Correct. And we did the same thing. We put out a list of everybody that was on the ballot, every single person in the nonpartisan races, and listed Democrat, unaffiliated, Republican, so that when people went to the polls, they'd know what the candidate, what their background was, or at least how they've affiliated themselves. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't. And I'm glad you did. And you know, I know that there was some heat. The press got a little upset about that. But you weren't the first to do that. The Sedgwick County Democrat Party was the first to endorse in that race. And I was glad that you did.
And theirs was a little bit more. It was that theirs was an actual endorsement.
Right.
Where we just informed everybody, you know, here's the Republicans, here's the Democrats, and they were unaffiliated. And in some races, as a Republican, there were races in Sedgwick County where there was not a Republican candidate. So letting them know this person's unaffiliated, this person's a Democrat, it's just information.
Yep.
And it's information that people should have.
Yep. No, I agree.
I think
you've got a big meeting coming up Thursday night. Doors are 5:30 for credentialing. The meeting starts at 6:00. And this is the reorganization, and one of the major changes is that you're not running for re-election for chair.
I am not. I've been very fortunate to serve for 2 years. I've really enjoyed doing it. I'm hoped that I've made a difference in ways that have been positive for Sedgwick County. Worked really hard for that. It's time though for new people to come on board and continue moving forward. And very happy to have, again, served, and I'm wishing for the best for the next team coming up. So, yes, it's our reorg meeting. We will be electing a new chair, vice chair, treasurer, and secretary for Sedgwick County Republican Party. Very important meeting. One of the key things that the precinct people do is elect the new leadership team. And then they also will be electing the delegates and alternate delegates to the 4th District. So it's an important thing. Hope everybody can show up. We've got most of the precinct people will be there. If they can't, they can have a proxy vote on their behalf.
I did get a question. Someone called me today. They had a question about that. And if I live in a precinct and I can't attend, can I give? And I'm a precinct committee. Well, I am. But if I will be there, by the way, Thursday night for obvious reasons. But if I can't attend and can anyone carry my proxy, or does the person have to be a resident of my precinct?
The person has to be a resident of your precinct. So a Republican resident in your precinct.
But not a precinct committee person, right? Just a registered Republican in my precinct.
Correct. So the most logical thing is, you know, we have a committee woman and a committee man. So if you have a counterpart and say I can't be there, then my committee man could carry my proxy for me. That's the most logical thing to do, is have your counterpart. If you don't have a counterpart, or both the precinct people can't be there, then it has to be somebody that lives, presides in that precinct. That's a little bit more difficult if you don't know who the Republicans are in your precinct. Hopefully you know another Republican in your precinct that can do it for you. But then if it was me, for example, I would have to go sign a proxy with their name on it, get it notarized, and bring that to the meeting. We also require in that instance, though, that we know a day in advance of who that person is, because we have to check to make sure that your proxy is a registered Republican in your precinct.
So the best thing, if they have questions, is for them to reach out to you, just so they get their questions answered. If they do need to get it verified, you guys can verify their identities. We're Republicans. We believe in voter integrity and election integrity. Best way for them to get in touch with you if they have questions.
They can send me an email to SCRP Chairman, so Sedgwick County Republican Party, SCRP Chairman@gmail.com. I check it several times a day. I will be looking for those, especially now, because there are some people with questions, to make sure that they get their proxy signed, and that it's what needs to be happened, and that their vote will count on Thursday.
Well, I have it on very good authority that that there will be a slate announcement here in the next day or so. So I'm sure folks can look forward to that as well. And, of course, we'll see you Thursday night.
Yes, well, thank you very much. And look forward to this meeting on Thursday.
Deb, I appreciate you. You've done yeoman's work. You've done a great job as chair. And just keep up the good work. And we'll look forward to seeing you Thursday night.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, John.
We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Get involved. Get engaged. Volunteer. It's a great organization. I highly recommend them. And, of course, while you're online, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Time now for another Hartman Truth Minute.
This is an opinion from a former judge, Keith M. Alber. I am a student of law whose age is 85. My first year of college was 68 years ago. One class I took was political science. A half page of my textbook essentially outlined a few steps to overturn a democracy. 1, divide the nation philosophically. 2, foment racial strife. 3, cause distrust of police authority. 4, swarm the nation's borders indiscriminately and unconstitutionally. 5, engender the military strength to weaken it. 6, overburden citizens with more unfair taxes. 7, encourage civil rioting and discourage accountability for all crime. 8, control all balloting. 9, control all media. What was printed in 1954 as a possible diabolic nightmare has become an emerging reality. I hope that Americans will unite enough to pin a good finish.
Well, they're working pretty good so far. I would say America's got it right so far, that's for sure. I didn't catch the name. We've got a caller on.
Tom.
Tom, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thank you for sticking around.
Hey, John, great show. I've been listening to you for quite a while.
Thank you.
But I just had to share this with you. I heard this commentator a few days ago. You know how so many people, just like 8 years ago, were so upset that Trump won, they were threatening to kill themselves and do God knows what else.
Oh, yeah, I've been seeing the videos of them shaving their heads. Yeah.
Well, my favorite was the guy said he was so upset that he was going to move away from the United States and move to Hawaii.
That had to be a liberal.
And the two guys said, should we tell him? The other guy said, no.
Yeah, no. Oh, that's priceless. That's priceless. Tom, I appreciate that. It is funny. I don't know if you've seen some of these videos, Phil, I saw one the other day. This girl shaved her head, and then she said she was going to abstain from sex for 4 years.
I did see that one.
And I thought to myself, well, now that you've shaved your head, the other will be a lot easier. But, it's like, come on, people. It's not the end of the world. If we'd won, it's not the end of the world. If we lost, it's not the end of the world. We've lost before. I mean, I've been through two gubernatorial campaigns where I drove a bus all over the state to help get my candidates elected and lost twice. You move on. You get up the next day, you go to work.
But you didn't.
No, I did not shave my head.
You did not threaten to shave your head.
Or give up sex. Yeah. I mean, it's like, come on. Grow up. These people are just not grounded in reality.
Oh, and then the montage of the the gals from The View, and then the Rachel Maddows of this world, and the Joy Reads, and it's just it's just head scratching.
And yet, had we lost, Republicans would be going to work the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd be disappointed. Don't get me wrong. No. I would have been very disappointed. And I don't know how I'd have had to put up with her cackling for 4 years. But, you know, we'd have pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps and gone to work the next day. And you've got these people that are just wailing and gnashing. And, you know, they're just beside themselves because Kamala Harris lost and trying to figure out what possibly could have happened. Well, what happened is you ran a bad candidate and she lost. That's what happened. So, you know, who knows? All right, folks, thank you for joining us. We've got a great show planned next week. In the meantime, carry on. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.